Walks in, writes 12 on the board, circles it several times. Culture and numerology. You're right. 12 is everywhere. 12 months. 12 hours on a clock. 12 zodiac signs. 12 apostles. 12 tribes of Israel. 12 days of Christmas. 12 members of a jury. Why 12? It's not arbitrary. 12 is divisible by 2, 3, 4, and 6. It's extraordinarily flexible. You can split it evenly more ways than almost any small number. 12 is useful because it organizes well. And that's today's topic. Organization. Specifically, why life doesn't stay flat. Why it becomes layered. Why hierarchy emerges not as a design choice, but as a survival requirement. Sets down coffee. We've established that life can persist. It replicates. It repairs. It maintains boundaries. It recycles constraints. But here's something we haven't addressed. Why isn't life just blobs? Why do we have cells with specialized organelles? Why do we have bodies with differentiated organs? Why do we have ecosystems with distinct niches? Why do we have societies with division of labor? Why does life become structured? Led? Hierarchical? Leans on the podium. Let me start with what doesn't work. Imagine an organization where every part does everything. Every component is identical. Every piece responds to everything, handles everything, depends on everything else. Sounds democratic. Sounds robust, no single point of failure, right? Wrong. This kind of flat organization fails catastrophically as it grows. Starts pacing. Here's why. Coordination costs explode. If every part has to communicate with every other part, the number of connections grows with the square of the size. 10 parts, 45 connections. 100 parts, nearly 5,000 connections. 1,000 parts, 500,000 connections. You drown in overhead. All your resources go to coordination and none to actually doing anything. Error propagates everywhere. In a fully connected system, a mistake anywhere affects everything. There's no containment. One part fails, and the failure ripples through every connection to every other part. Repair interferes with function. If you're trying to fix one thing while everything else depends on it and is still running, you create chaos. It's like trying to repair a car engine while driving on the highway. Flat organization collapses under its own connectivity. It doesn't scale. Stops, turns to the class. So what does work? Separation. Different tasks interfere with each other. Repair processes can disrupt replication. Replication can disrupt metabolism. Metabolism can disrupt structural stability. If everything happens everywhere, nothing works reliably. The processes get in each other's way. The solution isn't better precision. You can't engineer your way out of interference by being more careful. The solution is spatial and functional separation. Put the repair machinery here. Put the replication machinery there. Put the metabolism somewhere else. Now they can work without constantly tripping over each other. Walks to the window. This is specialization. And I want to be very clear about what specialization actually is. Specialization is not about efficiency. The usual story is that specialization emerges because it's more efficient. Division of labor. Comparative advantage. Everyone does what they're best at, and total output increases. That's not wrong, but it's not fundamental. The fundamental reason for specialization is error containment. When different functions are separated, errors are localized. Something goes wrong in the replication machinery, and it doesn't immediately destroy the metabolism. The problem stays in one place. Interference is reduced. Different processes aren't stepping on each other constantly. Correction becomes cheaper. You can fix one thing without having to fix everything simultaneously. one part can fail without destroying the whole. That's the key. That's what specialization buys you. It's not optimization. It's damage control. Sit on the desk. Now, once specialization exists, something else follows automatically. Hierarchy. Think about what happens when you have specialized components. Some of them are doing fast, local, immediate things. Reactions. Responses. Execution. Others are doing slower, broader, integrative things. Coordination. Regulation. Memory. The fast, local components fail often. They're on the front lines. They encounter errors constantly. But their failures are contained. They're replaceable. The slow, integrative components change rarely. They're buffered from immediate perturbation. They're more stable. Control and regulation migrate upward, toward the slower, more stable components. Execution migrates downward, toward the faster, more local components. This isn't design. Nobody planned this. It's just what survives under scale. Stands up. Let me make this concrete. Think about your body. At the bottom, you have biochemical reactions. Enzymes catalyzing reactions. Molecules binding and releasing. Fast. Local. Happening trillions of times per second. Above that, you have cells. Coordinating thousands of reactions. Managing their internal state. Slower. More integrated. Above that, you have tissues. Populations of cells working together. Even slower. Even more integrated. Above that, you have organs. Specialized structures with specific functions. Heart. Lungs. Brain. Above that, you have organ systems. Circulatory. Respiratory. Nervous. And at the top, you have the organism. You. Integrating everything. Each level operates on a different timescale. Each level has different failure modes. Each level provides stability for the levels below it. That's hierarchy. Layers of organization, each buffering and constraining the others. Paces. Here's why hierarchy stabilizes replication. Remember, replication amplifies things. Good things, but also bad things. If you have a small advantage, replication spreads it. But if you have a small error, replication spreads that too. Without hierarchy, replication copies fragility. Every weakness in the original shows up in the copies. Errors compound across generations. Collapse accelerates. Hierarchy buffers this. High-level constraints change slowly. They're conserved. They provide stability across generations. Low-level processes absorb variation. They can change without destabilizing the whole structure. It's like a company where the CEO sets long-term strategy, changes rarely, while frontline workers adapt to daily circumstances, changes constantly. The strategy provides stability. The adaptation provides flexibility. Replication only works, only produces stable lineages, once hierarchy exists to buffer error propagation. Stops at the board. Now, I have to give you the other side. Perfect hierarchy would be rigid. Every component perfectly subordinated to the one above it. Perfect top-down control. That breaks. Rigid systems shatter. They can't adapt to unexpected conditions. They can't handle situations the hierarchy wasn't designed for. So survivable hierarchy is imperfect. Messy. It allows feedback upward. Lower levels can signal problems to higher levels. Information flows both ways. It permits local autonomy. Not everything has to be decided at the top. Local components can handle local situations without waiting for permission. It tolerates inconsistency. Different parts can be slightly out of sync without the whole thing failing. hierarchy itself must be constrained. It's constraint on constraint, all over again. Even the organizing principle needs to be organized. Turns to face the class. At some point, something new emerges. As hierarchy deepens, you get layers whose sole job is coordination. They don't actually do anything in the sense of executing tasks. They regulate. They resolve conflicts. They decide when other things do their jobs. Think about a manager. A good manager doesn't do the work of their team. They make sure the team members aren't interfering with each other. They allocate resources. They resolve disputes. They set priorities. Control layers emerge not to optimize outcomes, but to prevent interference. This is a new kind of component. A metacomponent. A component whose function is about other components. Sits back down. Now, there's a fundamental tension in all of this. Centralization makes coordination easy. One decision maker. Clear authority. No conflicts about who's in charge. But centralization creates a single point of failure. If the central controller goes down, everything goes down. Decentralization avoids that problem. No single point of failure. If one part goes down, others can compensate. But decentralization sacrifices coherence. No one's in charge. Components might work at cross purposes. Coordination becomes expensive again. Spreads hands. So what survives? Systems that balance both. That distribute execution so there's no single point of failure in the doing. But partially centralize control so there's enough coordination to maintain coherence. This balance isn't chosen. It's forced. Systems that are too centralized get taken out by single failures. Systems that are too decentralized can't coordinate effectively. What persists is in between. And where exactly that balance lies depends on the environment, the scale, the specific challenges. There's no universal answer. Just a constraint, too far in either direction, and you collapse. Leans forward. I want to be honest about something. Hierarchy solves some problems and creates others. New failure modes appear. Bottlenecks, everything has to go through a few critical nodes. Delayed response, information has to travel up and down the hierarchy, which takes time. Miscoordination between layers, what makes sense at one level might not make sense at another. These aren't bugs that better design could remove. They're unavoidable consequences of hierarchical organization. So why does hierarchy persist? Because alternatives fail faster. Flat organization doesn't scale. Pure centralization is too fragile. Pure decentralization is too chaotic. Hierarchy is messy and creates problems, but those problems are survivable. The alternatives aren't. Stands up. All right. We're at another threshold. With hierarchy in place, something new becomes possible. Some layers, the slow, integrative, high-level layers, start to do something interesting. They integrate information across time. Not just what's happening now, but what happened before and what might happen next. They compare possible futures. Not just responding to what is, but anticipating what might be. They bias action before failure occurs. Not just reacting to problems, but preventing them. This is no longer mere reaction. This is prediction. And prediction, the ability to model the world and act on those models, that's what defines intelligence. We're not there yet. But we're standing at the door. Gathers notes. The closing line from your reading. Hierarchy survives because it confines failure before failure can spread. That's the core insight. Hierarchy isn't about control. It isn't about efficiency. It isn't about power. It's about containment. About keeping problems local. About preventing cascade. Life becomes layered because flat life collapses. Complexity becomes hierarchical because flat complexity drowns in its own coordination costs. Heads for the door. 12. The number that organizes well. You know what's interesting? Human organizations discovered this long before biology was understood. Armies have been organized hierarchically for millennia. Governments. Churches. Businesses. We stumbled onto hierarchy because it works. Because alternatives fail. Because you can't scale flat organization. We thought we were designing organizations. We were actually discovering constraints. The universe has opinions about how to organize. And hierarchy is one of those opinions. Turns back. Next week, prediction. How organization starts to model the world. How anticipation becomes possible. That's when things get really interesting. That's when we start to see how minds emerge from mechanisms. We're close now. We're very close. See you next week.